For great-looking t-shirts, hoodies, and sweatshirts, the TNT Shop is now open at tntradio.live. You're listening to The Reckoning with Timothy Shea on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
A couple of years ago now, I named Tulsi Gabbard the most dangerous Democrat in America, a title previously held by one Barry Satoro. Within seconds of his 2004 Democrat National Convention keynote, I turned to then Massachusetts State Senator, soon to be U.S. Senator Scott Brown, and I said, "Scott, there's the most dangerous Democrat in America. They're grooming that man to be president in 4 years." And he laughed and he said, "Tim, no one can go from my office to the Oval Office in one election cycle." And I said, "Scott, they're grooming him. I can see it happening." Sure enough, later that fall, Republican candidate, mysteriously, his divorce records got leaked, showing some pretty kinky stuff with his wife, Jerry Ryan. You're talking about Jack Ryan, of course, the Illinois Senate candidate. And Obama waltzed into the Senate seat, did nothing for 2 years, voted president a couple times, and sure enough, in 2008, they elevated him. Well, I named Tulsi the most dangerous Democrat in America because, like Obama, I see her as a wolf in sheep's clothing. Unlike Obama, I don't think that she has it in her heart to take America down necessarily, but I do think that she wants us to be more socialist. I think she's a Bernie bro at heart. And although she says a lot of things that appeal to the libertarian side of conservatism, I don't know that she's someone that would be in favor of banning socialism in this country. Might be wrong about that. I do think she's a person of some considerable integrity, and I think that a lot of her ideas are spot on, but I don't trust her to be with us when it counts, which is exactly how I view Ron DeSantis. I think Ron says a lot of good things. I think he's got a lot of good ideas. I think that he does fight for things that are important to us. I don't think that he has it in his heart to take down America. But Ron DeSantis, Yale College, secret society there, Harvard Law School, he was a JAG in the military, honorably served in Iraq, but he is an establishment guy. He's not MAGA. He makes a lot of great MAGA noises, but he's not the guy that's going to go to DC and take a wrecking ball to the federal government, reduce it by a third to a half, atomize it, send departments out into the hinterlands and away from the beltway, which is what President Trump will do. I keep saying what America needs is a pissed off Donald Trump that knows that most of his enemies are in the Republican Party, and he's going to go to DC to clean house. You know, it's no more drain the swamp. First time through, he figured out half the people in the swamp are Republicans. Rand Paul says he only trusts four other senators. There are only five senators that Rand Paul trusts to be solidly America first, including himself. I'd like to know who the other four are. I have suspicions. And as much as I supported him in 2016, I unfortunately don't think Ted Cruz is one of those four. I think Ted is, okay, there are two kinds of people, right? There are innovators and there are managers. And a tech company always starts with the founder developing some disrupting technology, a brand new product for the market, or a considerably cheaper product or innovative product. And the founder always gets pushed out by the money people within a few years. And then the managers come in. And the company might end up being huge, but not with the founder and not consistently innovating, disrupting, etc. They become establishment over time. Just look at Microsoft. The only company that didn't was Apple. And Apple tried its hardest to, but it screwed up, right? They went from being an innovative computer company to now we're going to be doing peripherals. We've got printers, and we've got this and that and all the other thing, and it fell under its own weight. They kicked out Steve Jobs. They hired a guy from IBM who tried to turn Apple into IBM. He was a manager. He wasn't an innovator. He was a manager. And Apple stock tanked. They brought Jobs back. And what did Jobs come up with then? He came up with the iMac. He came up with the iPod. And he came up with the iPhone. Three disruptive technologies. On top of the disruptive technology that he introduced first in 1984, the Macintosh platform. Steve was that rare person that could run a company and continue to innovate. There aren't many Steve Jobses in the world. Donald Trump is a Steve Jobs. He's not a manager. Ron DeSantis is not a Steve Jobs, and he's not a Donald Trump. He's a guy that once everything gets fixed, we repair the Republic, and she's humming on all cylinders again. Maybe then we can consider Ron DeSantis, because he will keep the ship of state headed in the right direction at the proper rate of speed. He's not the guy to run the Whitewater Rapids when you need it. I'm Timothy Shea. This is The Reckoning. Do you have an upcoming community event, rally, march, festival, or fundraiser that could do with some free publicity? TNT Radio wants to promote it for you. Simply visit the What's On events calendar on the tntradio.live website and submit your event details, and we'll get the word out on TNT Radio.
Breaking news heard here.
It's around the clock update.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Who says we have nothing but bad news here on The Reckoning? Here's some great news for a Friday. A federal appeals court has halted the Biden administration's illegal, unconstitutional, immoral, unconscionable COVID-19 vaccine mandate for federal workers nationwide. So if you work for the feds, you no longer have to get jabbed. And if you already did, suckas. Here with the story, joining me now is TNT Radio news producer Adam Ruckus Clark.
You don't really mean that. We feel bad for you if you took the jab, so we hope you feel better.
No, I don't wish anybody harm, Adam, but I don't feel bad for them. We warned them, and there are plenty of jobs out there, and I know a lot of people. I helped people find new jobs and stand up to their employers. Adam, most people that I helped who stood up to their employers, the employer backed down. They didn't have to get jabbed.
Oh, right on. See, that's yeah, see, that's legit.
Including a couple that work for the Air Force.
Well, good. All right. So this is one of these things. I'm learning more about politics every day, Timothy. I'm starting to see it more as like a slow dance, karate, jujitsu kind of fight, right? So we got like hoo-ah, and then they block it, and then they try to like block the block, and now we unblock the block. This is really fascinating to me. So this is how we're winning this time. So the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Fifth Circuit in New Orleans ruled in an en banc hearing on Thursday to keep a preliminary injunction on the COVID-19 vaccine mandate in place amid ongoing litigation over the matter. En banc is a legal term that means a case is heard by the entire bench of a court rather than just by a panel of judges selected from the bench. The latest move by the full appeals court of 16 full-time judges reverses a previous ruling that was made by a smaller panel of judges from the same appeals court. That three-judge panel had ruled in April 2022 to uphold the COVID-19 vaccine mandate for federal workers. That was back in September 2021 when Biden issued one of his awesome, lovely, stupendous executive orders. This one was requiring federal workers to get the jibby jab, otherwise they would face disciplinary actions, which could include being fired. The order permitted exceptions, supposedly, for religious and medical reasons. Feds for Medical Freedom, a group of about 6,000 federal workers, brought a lawsuit against the order, saying it likely, you think, exceeded the president's authority. U.S. District Judge Jeffrey Brown, a Trump appointee in January 2022, ordered the preliminary injunction on the vaccine mandate. At the time, the Biden administration said nearly 98% of covered employees had been vaccinated against COVID. The case moved to the Fifth Circuit. The majority ruling by three, just three, judge panel in April 2022 overturned Brown's decision and determined that the plaintiffs should have taken their complaints elsewhere. Specifically, Judge Carl Stewart, a Clinton appointee, wrote in the majority decision that the Civil Service Reform Act of 1978, quote, precludes district court adjudication of federal statutory and constitutional claims, end quote. Under the CSRA, federal workers facing adverse actions may appeal to an entity called the Merit Systems Protection Board, which decides whether the worker was properly disciplined. If the worker prevails, the board can order an agency to reinstate the worker or undertake other measures. Employees who disagree with the board can appeal to a federal appeals court. At the time, Judge Risa Barksdale, a George H.W. Bush appointee, dissented from the majority and said that Biden's vaccine executive order doesn't constitute an alleged adverse action subject to the CSRA. The full appeals court yesterday found that the case falls outside the jurisdiction of the CSRA because the federal workers are challenging the vaccine mandate on the grounds that Biden exceeded his authority. The majority of the court rejected arguments from the Biden administration that the president has the same authority as a CEO of a private corporation to mandate vaccinations for its employees. So that's how he was looking at things, Timothy. So I'll let you jump in. Any thoughts?
I'm still focusing on sound effects. I mean, can you imagine if we had sound effects for court? Hwah! That would be great. Maybe we ought to introduce that for the debates, Adam. Right? Donald Trump makes a blistering point against Ron DeSantis, and all of a sudden you get the whoosh sound effect.
I so see it, man. I think it would make everything far more watchable and
entertaining. I'll tell you, viewership would skyrocket.
Yeah.
In fact, look, if we really want to get people engaged in the political process, what we need to do is Texas steel cage death matches, right? Not line them all up behind lecterns and all have nice questions and snipe at each other. No way, baby. Put 16 people into a Texas steel cage. I'll bet your ratings would be through the roof, Adam.
Oh, yeah. Let's make America Jerry Springer again. Jerry.
Yeah, right? You know, I saw him out at the state fair probably 10, 12 years ago now. And he's a character. He's an absolute character and entertainer. You know, what people don't realize is that this stuff, these guys all have a shtick. And it's true with politicians too, right? Politics is Hollywood for ugly people. All these people, they craft their personalities, their on-camera personalities. They all have a shtick, right? So John Kennedy, senator from Louisiana, his deal is he's the slow-talking, smartest guy in the room that everybody overlooks because he's got that slow Southern drawl. And he totally leans into that. And he'll say things like, I might just be a country lawyer, but it seems to me. And then he'll say one of the most brilliant things you've ever heard. So, yeah, they've all got their shtick. And it's interesting. Once you've seen the traveling circus from behind the scenes, Adam, you realize just how little goes into being a politician. It's 90% fluff.
Yeah. But no matter what, this news story here, I suppose, is good news. If I'm not mistaken, as of right here, right now, you can be a federal employee and not be forced, mandated to take no jab. And then, you know, we're still, can you believe this, Tim? We're still waiting for the COVID emergency to officially end, right? That's like May 11th coming up. I mean, yeah, this is ridiculous.
Adam, this is the first illness in history that had deadlines. I can't use the PCR test. PCR tests are not valid. They're no good anymore, they say in June. But we're going to allow them to be used until December 31st. What? Translation. We ordered a metric boatload of these things, and we got to use them up. And we got to have payment made for every time we use up one of these tests that doesn't work anymore. And now, like, the emergency's over, but not until May. Like, what? Either people are getting sick or they're not getting sick. It's just all, this whole thing has been a psyop from the start. Called it out in March of 2020. People did get sick. People did die, but they died from lack of care. They died because effective early treatments were denied them, or they died because the treatment that they were given was designed to kill them. But not a lot of people actually died from the virus. So it doesn't surprise me that they're doing that. And yes, this is great news. It's a great story. Thanks for bringing it to us. And if you are a federal employee that hung tough, God love you. Congratulations. Glad you kept the pension going and you retained the integrity of your bodily fluids, as they said in Dr. Strangelove. All right, Adam, until next week, have a great weekend. Thanks for all the good news. You're listening to The Reckoning on TNT Radio.
Greg Mabry on TNT Radio.
Yeah, I came across your work via Dave McGowan's book, the book on the 60s, mainly the 60s and the 70s,
right.
Book where he exposed a lot of the MK Ultra mind control aspects and the connections that many of the big stars of the 60s and 70s, many of the connections that they actually had with the military industrial complex and, you know, various other sort of aspects of the deep state, as we call it.
His style of research was pretty groundbreaking, and it was very simple because all Dave did was take information that was there in the public domain, in mainstream sources, yep, and just piece it all together. And it's not until you put it all together that the patterns start to form. So it's like a giant jigsaw puzzle. And what he found was, almost without exception, connections into the world of the military, military intelligence, and various expressions of the government.
The No Fly Zone with Greg Mabry on TNT Radio.
A better business tip from TNT Radio. The benefits of advertising on today's news talk, TNT Radio, should be clear to businesses of any shape or size. It can be accessed anywhere, anytime, by anybody, and is the perfect way to build brand awareness and stimulate digital activity. If you'd like more information about advertising on TNT Radio, simply fill out your details on our contact page and we'll be in touch. To find out more, go to tntradio.live.
So many people who had no history of heart illnesses have got it now, or blood clotting after the COVID-19 vaccination. Punish those who hurt people with COVID madness, lighting the fuse for freedom. TNT Radio.
My guest tonight, author James Conroy, was on last December. You can go into the archive on tntradio.live or on your podcast app that you prefer, and look for our December 7th show where he discussed his children's books. I wanted to ask him back because his first book was entitled Plucking the Eagle, Bringing Socialism to the United States, a chronological history of how we got to where we are. And in light of the banking crisis and the looming economic downturn that I believe and others believe is facing the country, I wanted to bring him on to discuss the Fed, fiat currency, Creature from Jekyll Island, and all other things related to the economy. Welcome back to The Reckoning, James Conroy.
Thank you, Timothy, for having me. It's good to be back.
So, Roy, people know or they've heard of The Creature of Jekyll Island. A few people have even read the great book, The Creature from Jekyll Island. Jekyll Island is, of course, Jekyll Island, Georgia, but what happened? Who was there? What did they do? When did this all go down?
Well, they actually went down to Jekyll Island in 1910. And I can get to it later, but I'll just hint at it. Nelson Aldrich, who is the father-in-law of John D. Rockefeller Jr., who had six sons, Nelson and all the others, David, was on a National Monetary Commission, a two-year trip, sanctioned by Theodore Roosevelt, I believe, to study the banking crisis, because there was a crisis in the currency in 1907-08, sort of fabricated by J.P. Morgan, National Trust banks. There were banks, and then there were trusts, and trusts couldn't make investments. But they came up with a Tommy Lamont of J.P. Morgan and Davidson, came up with a trust to invest in copper mining in Canada and Alaska. And Morgan got involved, and or rumors of Morgan getting involved, and that created a sell-off and a glut and a chaos. And some other people were vying for, I think it was Max Wahlberg, or no, Adam Schiff from Kuhn, Loeb & Schiff. He was saying we need a central bank. So this all happened in 1907, 1908. Again, like Rahm Emanuel, don't waste a chaos. So with the chaos induced in 1908, Roosevelt sends Aldrich on the trip. He was a senator from Rhode Island. He married Schiff's daughter. His daughter married Rockefeller, and
yeah, Nelson A. Rockefeller was Nelson Aldrich Rockefeller.
Exactly. And so when he came back from his 2-year stint, they decided we need to meet at Jekyll Island. And that's when it went down. And that was around 1910. And remember, you know, travel, setting things up, getting things legislated. By 1913, they had it all ironed out. But that's what led up to it. But if I can just speak for a little bit about how this all came about, just to set the groundwork, like my book says, how we got to where we got. It basically comes down to the merchant bankers that were basically established in the early 1600s. And that was essentially Rothschilds and the Warburgs and a few others. And what happened, it's funny, by Christian etiquette, and nothing against the Jewish faith, but the Jews were not allowed to learn a trade or education. And yet, while transactions, shipping and trade were happening every day of the week, the Sunday, no one was allowed to transact business. It was against the Christian edict. So the Jewish people got involved in transacting trades and became merchant bankers, shipping goods all over the world. Now, what happens sometimes when royal families need money to fight a war, they need money. The merchant bankers had the money. And you've all heard of the British East Indian companies. And right around 1606, 1607, when, say, the King of England needed money, they would ask the merchant bankers for some money. Now, in return, the merchant bankers said, if you need more money, you have to come through us. They created a monopoly. And in exchange, the king, queen, the royal family, granted these people the sole charter to have an East Indian company, vis-a-vis the trade company coming from East India. So it was a, you know, my hand will wash yours, you wash my hand, and, you know, hunky dory. And you can see similar examples to that today. And obviously the Dutch got involved, and it became, you know, there's the Dutch East Indian Company, and there's a Dutch influence in all of this. That's where the Bilderbergers come from. So anyways, you have from 1600, okay, let's just jump right to, you know, coming to America, 1620. Let's just jump to the Revolutionary War, because prior to that, it was mainly barter systems. And we all know about the British imposing a tax on their goods coming to the United States. So U.S. citizens would pay a duty on British goods that in turn the British used to fight the French and Indian War in the United States. We were financing the war on our soil, very similar to today about helping China out, buying manufactured goods in China, making them wealthy, so they in turn can buy our farmland and everything else. So anyways, you know what happened. The colonies, they repealed that or did away with the duties, with the exception of tea. And that's what produced the Tea Party. So that was George Washington. It was called the Townsend Act, actually. And they got rid of the Townsend Act. And it was protectionism. From there, all the way to, say, the 1800s. And by 1803, they had, by 1791, 90% of the money in the treasury was from custom duties, and which is like an entrance fee, okay, or a cover charge to get your products into the country. So someone from France or Spain would bring in their products to the United States. Here's $5 for every barrel of whatever. That went to the treasury. So that's how they financed. There's no income tax. So the monies that were generated gave a lot of money in there, and that helped purchase the Louisiana Purchase for Thomas Jefferson, double the size of the country easily without taxes and without a war. Now, we all know, to just hit the high notes, that Andrew Jackson, they tried to introduce some central banking in the 1800s, 1820s, I think it was 32, where Jackson repealed the second attempt. The state banks really didn't want central control, and so Jackson repealed it all. Then you get up to the Civil War, and Lincoln tried to have a war tax, but that was fruitless. There were too many taxes along the lines of production to make a final product that it became inexpensive. Sales went down, so the tax they thought would generate a lot of money didn't. Sort of like the cigarette tax. You know, we have cigarette tax, but what if everyone stopped smoking? Well, you're not going to get any money.
Yeah, exactly. And let's pick it up there after the news. You're listening to The Reckoning on TNT Radio.
TNT Radio News.
This is news.
Here we go.
This is James O'Neill with a check of today's headlines. Former U.S. President Donald Trump has warned there could be death and destruction if he's indicted for allegedly instructing his lawyer to pay hush money to porn star Stormy Daniels. The Biden administration aims to allocate $7.1 billion in funding for three Pacific Island nations with which the United States has economic and defense ties. Nearly two decades after an Australian astronaut returned back to Earth from a space mission, the opportunity for another Aussie to fly it with NASA may be on the horizon.
Do you have a suggestion for a possible guest you'd like to hear on TNT Radio? Or perhaps you have a topic you feel we should discuss? Then we want to hear from you. Simply complete the suggestion form on the TNT Radio website. Help us make a difference on TNT Radio.
So, Jim, yeah, we've had a long history of using tariffs in this country. It was very successful. There was no income tax until the 16th Amendment. And, of course, they got that in with a lie. Every single thing the left says, does, or wants you to believe is either a lie or predicated upon a lie. They got it passed because they told states, oh, no, it's not a tax on wages. We're just going to tax the rich. It's a tax on passive income. We called it income, but it's just passive income. It's not wage income. And of course, they pass it. And what do you know? Next thing, oh, yeah, by the way, we're going to be taxing your wages. They did the same thing with Social Security. It's a voluntary program. And now they steal your money at the point of a gun. So
and they tax it again. So all Social Security used to be tax-free, but they reach in for a second dip. But just to go back, and I'll hit the brief notes, you know, Lincoln got in a war tariff that generated enough money to have a great second half of the 19th century. You know, you have the roaring 90s, you had manufacturing plants that go from 114,000 in the 1860s to 500,000 by the end of the century. You had the Great White Fleet that was paid for. We could pay for the Panama Canal. We paid for the management of the Philippines and Puerto Rico from the Spanish-American War. And then what happened is that 1907 crisis with Morgan that I mentioned, and you're right, they wanted to have an income tax, but you called it passive. Some people call it an indirect. An indirect or passive is something that the citizen can avoid, like a tax on cigarettes or a tax on this. Someone can avoid those taxes by not buying cigarettes, but anything direct on wages, as you mentioned, is correct. That was ruled unconstitutional 5-4. So these people got around this after Jekyll Island, and they were trying to call it a, and also a lot of people don't forget this. They brought in the income tax, but in the Constitution, it was to be, any sort of taxes were to be apportioned equally over the people in each state. So it was sort of a flat tax on everyone. And they got away with, they did away with the apportionment part of that in the 16th Amendment. They grabbed an excise tax, got it passed, and then they call it a graduated income tax. And that's why we have the numerous brackets. And all because of the tariffs, like the Payne-Aldrich tariff of 1909, and I think the Underwood tariff cut tariff revenues. So the government's looking, we cut off the hand that feeds us. The government's looking for revenue because of the two tariffs I just mentioned, decreased the revenues. So they instituted the right of the government to borrow money, set up the Federal Reserve or Central Bank, and then they instituted the income tax. And the funny thing is, there was a National Monetary Commission, I believe, in 1908, and they came up with the Carnegie Endowment of Peace that was a tax-exempt foundation. So how do you set up something in 1908 to make it tax-free when taxes aren't imposed until 5 years later? So they knew what was going to happen. And they set it up. They got their central bank. They can coin money. They can print money. They can... the government can borrow money, and they set up the means to tax the income on people. And, that is a big problem.
That was a big step in my political awakening. I was a teller at a bank all through school, and I noticed that some dollars said silver certificates, and there are some bills, and some said U.S. notes. The ones from 61 said United States note. It didn't say Treasury note. And I looked into it a little bit, and that's when I found out that the Federal Reserve isn't federal and there's no reserve.
Correct. When I believe it was during Lincoln's term where they got money on the gold and silver standard, and the custom revenues generated so much, that's where the term free silver came from in the 1890s. People were getting free money from the government because their treasury had accumulated so much money. So it was free silver. So yes, it was backed by, so I have a silver certificate. I got it in the early 70s. I think they discontinued them in 1961, 63 or something. Sometime, but yeah, it used to be backed by gold. Now it's backed by the good faith and credit of the United States. So they achieved that goal. And so we already know how I just told you what happened with Jekyll Island in 16. And what else can I tell you? You wanted to get involved in the trade situation?
Tell us about the book what led you to write it and how you've laid out the case and what your conclusions are.
Let me add one big influence of reintroducing the central bank and the special relationship between England and the United States is Cecil Rhodes. Now, he went to South Africa for his health reasons, and yet there were a lot of diamonds, and they conflicted with the Boers, the local people down there. And so the Boers finally left and they went inland. And Cecil Rhodes followed them. And there's gold there. So Cecil Rhodes wanted some gold. He had some diamonds. He uses the British Army to defeat the Boers in the battle, accumulates a bunch of wealth. And he comes up with the idea to recapture, meaning have a partnership with the United States. And he sets up a Rhodes Scholarship. And as you know, you coined the term, that's where people get accredited. They go to these schools and they're getting indoctrinated with this sort of belief. And they come back as, quote, experts and spew their opinions on us, which is basically pro-central banks, federal government, New World Order, rather than good for the country.
And these people aren't there on their merits. They get,
right.
Barry Satoro did not get in to Columbia. You don't transfer from Occidental to Columbia, first of all. Then you don't get graduated with the degree in political science when you haven't taken the two courses from the chairman of the political science department that are required. You know, he's not a conservative. And he said, I have no idea who this guy was. Wayne Allen Root was at Columbia, allegedly Obama's classmate, and neither he nor anybody at their reunion had ever met him. And you'd think in a liberal school like Columbia University, everybody be saying, oh yeah, I remember him. Nope, nobody knew the guy. And then he goes to Harvard Law School, didn't grade on, didn't write on, and yet, what do you know? He ends up as president of the Harvard Law Review. It's not education, it's credentialing. These people are pre-selected, just like, Jim, it's just like, you know, the Survivor and American Idol and all these quote-unquote reality shows. They already picked the winner before the show even before they even film it, they've already picked the winner, and they've got the script and all the drama that's going to happen mm-hmm. that season. And that's exactly what we see. You know, all these people get elevated and they all get selected, you know, to be a World Economic Forum up and coming superstar and this credential and that job. And then he went to work for that bank and what a great resume he has. Yeah. Because he was groomed. That's what they do. Let's pick up with the trade after the break. You're listening to The Reckoning on TNT Radio.
President Biden warns we're all damned unless we follow his green policies.
From Washington, D.C., this is the Morano Minute with your host, TNT Radio's Mark Morano.
President Joe Biden gave his climate views, appropriately enough, on the Comedy Channel. Here is a portion of the interview.
If we don't keep the temperature from going above 1.5 degrees Celsius raised, then we're in real trouble. That whole generation is damned. I mean, that's not hyperbole.
First off, that is hyperbole. Second off, no one is damned. The only way we are damned is if we follow the climate agenda and shut down modern society to do absolutely nothing for the climate. Second, the temperature goal of 1.5 C or 2 degrees C were revealed in the ClimateGate emails to be, quote, pulled out of thin air and with no scientific basis. It was called clearly a, quote, political goal. Dr. Roger Pilkey Jr. said it's more grounded in political aspirations than science, and there's essentially no science behind these temperature goals. Yet, we will face the wrath of Mother Nature if we don't follow. Let's end medieval superstition and return to science. Reject the net zero climate agenda. This is Mark Morano for the Morano Minute on TNT Radio.
A man's home is his castle, but his men's shed, that's his kingdom. There are now more than 1,000 men's sheds across Australia, and they're more than just a shed. You can make things, grow things, find a mate, be a mate, shoulder to shoulder. The Australian Men's Shed Association can help to find a shed near you.
Yeah, there's something for you at the Men's Shed.
Welcome to The Reckoning with Timothy Shea on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
My guest this hour, author James Conroy. Roy, one of the things that is very interesting is how all the wars in the last 30 years have involved countries that didn't have a central bank. And you know what happened right after the war ended? They got a central bank. And what people don't realize is that all these central banks aren't government entities. These are all private banks. And guess what? They're all owned by the same people, Jamie Dimon and the Rothschilds and the Rockefellers. And it's unbelievable. And it not only affects war and peace, but it affects international trade, doesn't it?
Yeah, I could ask you just how does the royal family accumulate their wealth? How does any royal family in the world accumulate their wealth? What did King Charles' ancestors do to accumulate the wealth? Did they make a widget? No. So what has trade done? You wanted to know? Yes, Rothschild calls it a Rothschild job where it's a little bit based on central banking, but the Rothschild's job is to either try and create war so governments need loans, or if not, create an enemy to foster that development. And, you know, we got into World War One. I pointed out in my book that, I have it on good fortunate. I quoted another book how the Lusitania, which was all the products in Lusitania, was bought by J.P. Morgan, and they set up the Lusitania to sink. American made, I believe, no, it was British, but the first Lord of the Admiralty, Winston Churchill, had the destroyer escort return to England and had it slow down to, you know, less than half the speed, which made it an inviting target. And I wish I could find the quote in the book, but the guy in charge of the investigation said it was a damn dirty business, and he was investigating the Lusitania. He said it was just a dirty trick. It was terrible. And this isn't in the press. It's 100 years ago. But, in the central banks, you know, yeah, you had the roaring 20s, but the central banks, you know, the trade did not, you can hear in Ferris Bueller's Day Off, they call it the Smoot-Hawley tariff or whatever. That did not cause the depression or the crash, because that was passed 6 to 8 months after the crash actually occurred. So how could a tariff that was passed afterwards cause something before? And it was just a boom and bust cycle. There was a lot of liquidity that the British urged the United States to do. And then there was a bust. They raised interest rates, very similar to what's going on today with Biden, you know, printing money and then raising rates, and makes you wonder. But we had 10 years of Roosevelt, and, you know, we had to go through a war, and that's the chaos. That's the Rothschild job. And they're all, you're right, there always seems to be a means. Didn't Iraq not have a central bank until after the conflict, the war in 2001 or 2004? Yeah.
Yeah. So, that's one of the countries I'm alluding to. And what do you think is going to happen in Ukraine?
Oh, I'm sure there'll be a central bank. I'm eventually. I don't know. It's too difficult to say. I don't know what Russia's going. I don't know if Russia's going to be allow them to have complete freedom and independence again. And are they going to be joining NATO or not? I mean, they're not a NATO country, and here we are spending all this money and resources on it when, you know, we have issues with our own border. But to get back, you want to know the impact of trade, the legal stuff, and the jobs, government figures, whatever they, when a lot of jobs go overseas, because, I can go back to the dumping. Back in the 60s, there were 28 TV manufacturers in the United States, and, technology goes to Japan. U.S. people do not have the money because of high taxes and dwindling value of the dollar. So they buy the import, and the import gets dumped, and we lose a lot of people who are working and paying taxes. So with a shrinking tax base due to foreign imports, we're hurting our own selves. And you mentioned the legal impact. Before WTO, there was the General Agreement of Trades and Tariffs, or Tariffs and Trade. And that's when I brought up was 1991, when this non-government body or bureaucracy of unelected officials overruled our Congress to have labels on tuna that were caught without damaging killing dolphins. And the Japanese and Mexico were doing it. And that ruled in favor of them that it was an illegal practice. But since then, yes, the WTO has said, you know, we have to back up the United States on this. But the thing is, we have government, non-government bureaucracies, these new world order institutions that are overriding our legislature. And it's going to happen again now. My buddy Scott Paul was on recently, and the gentleman from Ethiopia, who helped allow China into Ethiopia, and Ethiopia is $33 billion in debt to China. China groomed this guy. Now he's in charge of the World Health Organization. And they're working on the means to have the World Health Organizations, in case of the next pandemic, to override our Congress on what our policy is for dealing with the next pandemic. So we're not going to.
Yeah, we had Scott Powell on the week after you. If folks want to listen to that interview, it was on December 12th. You can go on your podcast app or right at tntradio.live and look back in the archives. James was on December 7th, and Scott was on December 12th. Those are two good shows to listen to.
Well, thank you, Timothy, for having him. He's got a good book out too. But anyways, you know, back to the trade and impacting workers. You had John Hines and George Mitchell, one from Pennsylvania and one from Maine. They were their state was involved in shoe factories. But when companies are going overseas to make shoes, namely Nike, a lot of people are going to be laid off. And, you know, a New Balance guy, what's his name, Jim Davis or something, Charles Davis, he decided to pay his workers and hire more people at home to make it domestically. And to me, it reminds me of the Henry Ford attitude of pay my workers so they can afford my car. And if people had more income, less taxes, more disposable income, we could make more products here, employ more people, and instead of shipping our goods overseas. Look what just happened recently with the supply shortage. People couldn't get shoulder pads, socks, sneakers, chips for automobiles. And as you know, George Washington said, we should be able to make everything we can at home that's essential for our livelihood, especially military equipment. He said that back in his inauguration. Hamilton put it in.
And he actually said, Jefferson said, that it was every American citizen's duty to grow hemp in their backyard. Hemp used to make rope was very important for building up our naval power. And we didn't want to be dependent on the United Kingdom for all the lines and the various ropes you need on a sailing ship. And so they said it was your patriotic duty to grow hemp in your backyard. We need to be hemp sufficient.
So besides the free trade, which is there's too many quotes in the book that show the negative impact on it, but that's what is taught in the Rhodes Scholarship and some top business schools, because they argue that, oh, it's good for the stockholders, them. Oh, it's good for the consumer. It's less expensive. Why is it less expensive? Because people are overtaxed. And, you know, when the first taxes were enacted, it was 1% on people making over $4,000. 1%. What's 1% of $4,000? What, $4? And I think it was 2% on couples making more than $20,000.
It's 40 bucks. And, yeah, 40 bucks.
Yeah, 40 bucks instead of 4 bucks. 40 bucks. Yeah, 10% would be 400. So 40 bucks. So 40 bucks on $2,000 or $4,000. And, you know, now you look at all the taxes and the rates and, you know, confiscatory levels. Well, there's no more disposable income for people to do. So they buy the cheap imports. And then I just told you about the legal ramifications about how they can, you know, these people that can overrule what we want to do in our country with regard to trade. And trade, this is the other thing. They're breaking the Constitution. Scott points this out. It's in my book. Treaties have to be approved with the advice and consent of Congress, the Senate. And what they do with everything else, they call things an agreement, a pact,
an understanding.
No, NAFTA, North American Free Trade Accord. So what happens is, unlike what happens when the president nominates a Supreme Court justice or an ambassador, we've seen the proceedings. There's no advice and consent from Senate. Those things are supposed to happen with these trade pacts. And what happens is they call them a different name. Bill Clinton did this with NAFTA and just say, look, it's not a treaty. Just go up and down, vote with your thumb, and give me, the only person that was involved in the deal was the president.
Well, that's why we haven't had a war since World War II. Do you know?
Yeah.
People don't realize this. America has not had a war since World War II.
Oh, we didn't have a war with Don Trump, but before and after we had some sort of conflict.
Well, we didn't have any police actions or security involvement or anything else. All these other euphemisms that they make, but you know, war is supposed to be declared by Congress, and the executive branch has gotten around that now for 70, 80 years.
Right. And, you know, we got Ukraine now, and Biden spending billions. And let me add one last thing. Bill, besides Bill Clinton going with the up and down vote, he also approved, people may not know this, but Costco, COSCO, that's a Chinese ocean shipping company. And Bill Clinton by himself signed it over at the Long Beach Naval Shipyard in California to China shipping company. So God knows what China's putting on their ships that leave China, that come over to the Long Beach Naval Yard that they're leasing out and may own now, but they have the right to put their ships there and spreading stuff across our country. It's insane. But Bill Clinton, one person without the advice and consent, did that.
And yeah, and look, these people clearly...
Those are the Rothschild Mandrake mechanisms, but the Rothschild jobs of creating some sort of war. People can argue that we supplied a lot of military to Russia during World War II, and you know that was the war that was supposed to resolve everything. But oops, all of a sudden Russia is a power which enabled governments to get bigger and spend more on military. You know, the military industrial complex that Eisenhower warned about. So yeah, it's trade impacts, you know, a lot of things with the Federal Reserve and with interferes in our ruling our own country of what we want to do for ourselves. Like I said with the dolphins, you know, that can all go out the window because someone in Brussels or somewhere says, no, you can't do that. And you know,
well, as George Carlin said decades ago now, it's a big club and we're not in it.
Yes, true. And, you know, they still try and tell us, you know, how to live and what to do. Look at the digital currency they're trying to introduce to us, you know, doing away with cash, doing away with the barter system, because they want to direct what you are going to buy, just like with the battery operated cars. I mean, I saw it on the news recently about states are going to outlaw gasoline powered cars by 2030. Well, where's our choice? Nope, you're going to do what we're telling you to do. And, you know, who knows, maybe this little banking issue, which wasn't systemic, just a bad egg, because I think the guy that tanked the SVB bank out in California was also involved in Lehman in 08. But he was.
Yeah, isn't it funny how these guys? I was talking on Wednesday with Floyd Brown, last night actually, with Floyd Brown about failing upward. How these people screw everything up, and they end up getting promotions at other companies. Like, you screw something up as the senior sales exec, and you end up CEO at the next company. You screw that up, you get a golden parachute. And you know, they just keep getting moved around, these credentials.
Well, here in Connecticut, they're trying to push affordable housing in wealthy neighborhoods, and people don't want that. They want local autonomy. And I just look back and all these Democrat proposals, you know, post-World War II, if you didn't have the money, you didn't go to college. My parents couldn't afford it. Then they said, the liberal Democrats said, or the globalists said, you know, kids need to be able to take a loan. So the banks loan kids and the students loan kids money. And it was due diligence that kids may be able to pay it back. Then the legislator voted for the government to take over the school loans. And now they're asking the taxpayers to help them pay for their mistake, their bad policy. It's the same thing that happened with the housing crisis in 08. Everyone deserves a home. Let's lower the standards. Let's force government institutions, Ginny and Fannie, to hand out the money. And then when we realize that they're bad loans, we're going to farm them off to the financial institutions and have them finance it. And if it fails, we'll blame them. And now they're trying to initiate another housing policy, and it's just obscene. It's like, how many more failures can they have before people wake up and say, you know, the government is not the answer?
Well, unfortunately, I think the answer is that they have an endless supply of failures in stock, which is why we need somebody like Donald John Trump to go to D.C. and take a wrecking ball to it. The federal government needs to be reduced in size by one-third to one-half.
Yeah.
Thanks so much for coming on, James Conroy. The book is Plucking the Eagle. You can find it on Amazon. Until next week. All right. Stay tuned for the Hevorier Moritz Show. Until next week, God bless you. God bless these United States. Keep fighting the good fight.